And I swear, man, it was like watching the future of it was so weird. And I promise you, Ready Player One is gonna be like real life. Hello, everybody. This is Calvin, your host of the Crypto Drip Podcast. This is episode 3, where Mr. Goose and I talk all about the possibilities of blockchain technology, ranging from AI to finance, even to gaming. But before we get into that, let's hear a word from our sponsor. Do you like NFTs? I like NFTs. Well, you're in luck, because this episode of the Crypto Drip Podcast is sponsored by Bobclats, the first original African NFT collection on Cardano, created by Liquid Finance co-founder Josh Akpin, the one and only. The launch of the sale will begin on May 1st, so be sure not to miss out, as there will only be 500 of these NFTs available. The link to the website and the official Twitter page will be in the show notes, so make sure you check it out. So it's obvious, I mean, you've done a ton of research into Singularity Net. We like to refer to them as... Yeah, we like to refer to them as AGI. That's their token name. But in light of doing that research, you know, I think... Well, I have two questions. One is, what do you see as the potential of AGI in the next 5 years in terms of, like, real use cases in everyday life?
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then what about the next 20 years after that?
Man. Okay. I have a ton to say about this. And I feel like this may go on a rant. So people put on your hearing aids and listen in. So to start this off, and I hope it can at least, like I said earlier, draw out some new perspectives for you guys here and just how big SingularityNet can be and the problems that it solves, not only now, but in the future. So to start off, AGI is not only the ticker, but it's also the utility token for the SingularityNet ecosystem, and is what drives the tokenomics for that ecosystem. At the same time, it's the acronym for Artificial General Intelligence. Artificial General Intelligence is basically an unachieved technology as of today, right? As it stands right now, artificial agents are very narrow-minded, right? They take in the code that people give it, and then they eat up data and data feeds, and they can interact with that data in that very narrow space. Over time, though, and with SingularityNet's ecosystem, they can begin to develop broader patterns of organization and develop ways to think outside of the narrow confines of which they were developed in. So with that being said, I personally believe SingularityNet has, you know, a massive vertical potential across multiple industries that are going to be dependent on AI now or in the future. So like doing research for SingularityNet, like pretty much every forecast that I read uses, you know, like 2030, right? The end of the 2020 decade as the goalpost for this AI revolution, right? Or the fourth industrial revolution. And, you know, those same forecasts, you know, most of them will say that, you know, nation states, GDPs could double on efficiency alone, or these, you know, real hype pieced marketing. But at the end of the day, like, organizations and big tech are going to eat up a lot of the development. Like right now, most of the development's happening in retail and banking. And, you know, I actually have a good story. I have a friend here. So I'm based in San Francisco. I have a really good friend. He works for Capital One. He's a master engineer there. And we were talking as I'm writing the SingularityNet paper for next week, Wednesday, you know, about different stuff that he's working on. And he's actually working on AI right now. They're building an AI agent that can take in real account data, right, from Capital One Banking, and their AI agent will be able to take that data and synthesize it into something that replicates the real world data to a T, right? Because they can't use actual accounting data to run tests and stress test different things, so they need to synthesize this data. Once it's fed all of this data and continually fed, the agent can then you know, create in potentially an infinite amount of data sets in which they can analyze. And Capital One's strategy is to use those AI agents to figure out when, how, and why the next financial collapse will be, right?
Or the
next recession. Yeah, exactly. So AI tech is being developed right now for actual use cases. And, you know, something like that is massive, right? Like mm-hmm. we're going to be able to figure out why people are banking the way that they're banking, why they're making certain transactions. And these AI agents are going to be able to learn from that and create models as to why our financial system or where our financial system's heading, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's super big. Where I think SingularityNet actually has the opportunity to shine or to capture a massive amount of market cap that people just aren't aware of are these. The two major concerns that I see and that I've, you know, researched on are as AI matures around or with markets, right? They're going to create these very centralized super hubs, right, of wealth. And these super hubs are going to be big tech companies, right? Like Google, Facebook, IBM, because not only do they have the resources, but they also have the right developers developing AI tech, right? And so when AI is needed across multiple different industries, or if not all of infrastructure, who are they going to be purchasing products and tooling from? It's going to be from these big tech companies who are investing a ton of resources into AI development. So it's going to create this massive extracting or sourcing of value from other sectors within the economy. And I guarantee there's going to be a ton of antitrust legislation that's going to come from it. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is, as this is happening, there are countries throughout or around the world, much like Africa, which is why if you read my newsletter yesterday, that deal with Cardano is absolutely massive in ways that I don't think people are understanding. The second problem is that developing countries may get left behind with AI, right?
Right.
Now, at the ground floor, AI technology coupled with robotics could potentially wipe out, you know, the opportunity for labor workers. And as it stands right now in developing countries like Africa, labor force is flourishing right now, and it's driving most of the, you know, underlying economy from agriculture to manufacturing, et cetera. But at the end of the day, it's going to be cheaper to employ robots for mm-hmm. redundant labor jobs, which are going to eliminate people, you know, able to work those jobs. Secondly, governments who want to implement AI, you know, within their infrastructure are going to have to pay these super hubs, these centralized sources of AI technology at an obscene premium, right? Like they're going to be able to mark up their prices immensely, and it's going to cut spending programs for national state policy. So this is where Singularity comes in. Not only one, can they combat the first problem by introducing a globally distributed, decentralized marketplace for AI tooling products and also broader technology between the AI on top of the platform, right? Because now they're going to allow developers that are fragmented or they're not employed by big tech companies to commercially launch their tooling to the world and incentivize them to make money, right, with their tokenomics.
Yeah.
So that's how we siphon value and even data from big tech companies, and we're able to distribute that in a more fair fashion. That way we're not creating these, you know, centralized hubs of development. And right. Secondly, you know, with Africa, these tooling, because they're decentralized and there isn't a way for things to become privatized or centralized or things like that, we'll be able to offer countries like Africa or other developing nations much cheaper alternatives to AI tooling and products. So yeah. This deal, like I'm saying, with Cardano in Africa is massive, right? And SingularityNet, by the way, has been in Addis Ababa or Ethiopia since 2013 or around that time. You know, they've been talking to, just like Cardano, nation state governments. So don't be surprised if something with SingularityNet pops up.
Yeah.
But things like this are huge. Like especially this education deal. Like let's take an education's, you know, perspective, right? Now you're going to have these students who, like the article said, are going to have these, are all offered their own, you know, digital format of learning. And the way that these you know, digital format learning tools are run are by machine learning algorithms, in which can personally educate people within Africa, right? Like there's a ton of different ways for AI agents to be utilized in emerging economies, and this education deal is going to be huge for that.
Yeah.
So I think that like the upward potential for Singularity is absolutely massive. And the last thing, like the value proposition and question that I want to ask you guys is this. Do you really want AI technology to be a weapon for nation states around the globe, right? Do you really want AI development sectioned into big tech super bubbles, you know, siphoning value from various sectors? Like, you know, just like blockchain is for the people, SingularityNet is AI for the people, right? And while AI begins developing, you know, organizations of patterns in a more broader way through data, you know, it's going to help the AI. And this is something that I don't think people are realizing. It'll help the AI grow biases for people, just like humans grow biases for other people, right? Yeah. And do we really want the first general intelligence, as it makes its transition, you know, to be more autonomous, to think the way that big tech thinks, to think the way that nation states think? No, like it's at the end of the day, like big tech and nation states, they're undoubtedly reflect, you know, fear and,
yeah,
you know, they're fear driven or they're predatory, you know, in competition and ways like this. Like, that's not what we want as the foundation of the transition from AI to general AI.
Yeah.
You know, so do we want to help foster a platform that's going to be able to allow the masses to develop AI in a more borderless way, a more inclusive way? You know, because at the end of the day, like the reality is AGI is inevitable, right? General intelligence is inevitable. It's going to happen. So therefore, so is the singularity, right?
Right.
And I know that scares a lot of people. So why not invest or be behind something that's going to be able to give us the best chance towards a singularity that's as benevolent or non-indifferent to the human species as possible? Right? Because it's not about refuting its existence anymore, right? It's about choosing the right horse to secure that most beneficial, artificially intelligent future.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like people don't, this idea of decentralized AI really like hits home for me when you consider the fact that because it's decentralized, because it's open source, I literally can harness AI in my everyday life. Like for me. And, you know, when it's siloed in these giant corporations, like let's take Siri, for instance. I don't get to utilize Siri outside of her context or outside of her boxes, right? And this idea of like a decentralized AI, I literally can go, I can contract out work to these AI agents on the SingularityNet infrastructure and create my own tools, and it's completely accessible to anybody. And I think that's kind of like the difference is like when AI is built on these huge corporations, that's a black box, and you're more just a benefactor of functionality that somebody else made, but you don't necessarily get to control it. And I think that's huge.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it'll eliminate this, you know, a big, and even if we just get back into finance, like a big, you know, underpinning of financial wealth gap is this new paradigm of exit strategies for startups, right? Like valuations for these startups are absolutely, you know, overinflated. So, you know, when, you know, big tech companies like Facebook or Google acquire smaller startups for massive valuation, and the majority of that, or at least some percentage of that, goes to the founders, you know, that's what creates wealth gap, especially when there's hundreds of startups being acquired. And when we have an exit strategy like that, that's going to underpin that same AI development, right? Like say you have a Harvard graduate or an MIT graduate who's writing his paper or who's doing a project for his graduation, and he creates this novel algorithm for AI. And instead of launching it on something like SingularityNet, which he will be monetarily incentivized to do because he can make money from it, he instead goes for the exit strategy and has Google acquire his tooling for a massive evaluation. So there's the economic perspective that it could also solve as well. But I think that's, you know, also something that other people don't realize.
Yeah. Yeah, it's huge. Okay, so I'm going to go on to the next question. In terms of decentralized finance, what's an area in blockchain that you don't think has even been considered yet? Like, what's something that blockchain could do for DeFi that we haven't necessarily seen the fruit, the outworking of yet?
That's a good question. I'd say, I, again, now that I'm on this like AI rant, I want to say something like AI, like blockchain has not fully developed, realized, or come to terms with how revolutionary AI can be, especially with the backdrop of with blockchain. But I'll try my best and not go that route. I'm going to say insurance. I think insurance is...
I was hoping you'd talk about that.
I'm going to say insurance. I think it's the final frontier of DeFi and the final technology that will solidify and validate the way that blockchain can serve as a cheaper alternative or a more inclusive alternative to financial investment. Or even financial services, not just investments in particular. But I think right now, like there's just not, there really isn't any, you know, noteworthy insurance projects, mostly because it's going to be very hard to figure out how that system will work. Right. I think there's a couple on Ethereum. There's a couple starting up, but like for instance, the United States insurance economy is massive. I think this past year premiums alone was like our net premium payments were like $1.5 trillion. You know, so the economy there is massive. And by providing something that's more inclusive to people, I think would be like the nail in the coffin for the emergence of DeFi. And when people start like developing something like this and stress testing different strategies, and also like the way to make it more inclusive is like allow people to make their own insurance products, right? Like,
exactly.
You know, maybe you want to make a package of insurance for auto loans, right? And then you can set your own, you know, you can set your own risk premium and stuff like that. You have an Oracle that can feed you data feeds or they can feed you data from whatever data that you need to, you know, figure out if like claims are verified and stuff like that. Like that's going to be huge, right? Like people then will have vehicles in which they did not have access to in traditional legacy markets and DeFi markets, right? So I think insurance is going to be, like I said, one of the last things that happens, but also one of the biggest.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like, you know, because all the data lives on the blockchain, verification happens almost instantaneously. Whereas like current insurance, you have to go through this entire process of verifying a claim. I think there's a lot of benefit in there that hasn't necessarily been explored yet.
But. Yeah. And especially like when we talk about verifying a claim, like people that create this, you know, more autonomous way of providing insurance, your overhead's obviously a lot less, because then the people who need to go verify claims, those are your oracles, you know? Like you don't have somebody who's getting in his car, he's driving to the salvage shop to go make sure if that car got, you know, totaled, right? You just have the guy from the salvage shop put the data into, you know, whatever endpoint that the oracle is pointing to, and then the oracle will be like, the guy says it's totaled. Yep. There's your claim verification. So that minimizes overhead on a pretty massive scale.
Yeah, it's huge. All right, last question for you. And this one, I want you to try and go outside of the finance industry. And I'm going to put a caveat here, even the AI industry. So what is the single most exciting? So what is the most exciting industry for blockchain yet to be, I'm not going to say discovered, I'm going to say actualized. So what's the most exciting in your opinion?
There's two. No, there's one. The close second would be real estate. I think the introduction of real estate in a tokenized way on a blockchain is fascinating and insane. I think the more interesting is video games. I think the day that we can implement blockchains in a format that fits unnoticeable to the end user in a video game and is seamless for the end user in a video game is going to be a massive step forward for the industry and the entertainment industry. With that being said, and I honestly, I don't have much more to expound on that because I feel like there's a lot of things that I'm missing in terms of my understanding of tokenization, in terms of blockchain development, stuff like that. So with that being said, I kind of want to turn it to you. Like, I remember the first time we talked, we were going on for like an hour and, you know, you mentioned your grand vision, right, for blockchain. Yeah. Was represented pretty well with the movie, Ready Player One, right? Where,
yep,
you know, you had all these video game characters or these virtual characters in a world where it simulated real life, but in, you know, with a video game backdrop. Right. Can you like expound on why you think that's, you know, the next step that's exciting to you?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I 100% agree. I think video games is, it's like the holy grail of blockchain that hasn't really been able to be tapped yet. And a lot of that has to do with scalability issues, right? So like nobody's going to want to play a game where they have to pay $200 in transaction fees every time they accomplish a goal, right? So like there's definitely a race here and opportunity, I think, for video games and blockchain to, it's like the next frontier almost. But let me, so let me go back to Ready Player One. So this towards the beginning of my blockchain journey and trying to just understand like the inner workings and what it is. And I'm typically, I'm very much an idea guy. So if I see a new way of doing things, my mind immediately goes into, you know, what are ways we can capitalize on that. And Ready Player One, in my opinion, I actually saw it right after starting to get into blockchain. And I swear, man, it was like watching the future. It was so weird. And I promise you, Ready Player One is going to be like real life in 20 years.
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah. And hopefully less than that, but it takes into account all these other things on blockchain, like AI and like tokenization, ownership of data, transfer of data, you know, all that type of stuff. But let's just, you know, an example to kind of paint the picture here for anybody who hasn't seen Ready Player One. There's like this huge virtual world that anybody can enter into with what they call an avatar. It'd be similar to like, you know, if you were to log into an account, like, you know, Fortnite, you log in, you have your account and you have an avatar and you go play. But in this world, you actually own everything that avatar owns. And really the avatar is more just like a visual expression of your wallet, right? So that's part of it. Okay. So, and then in Ready Player One, there's like this metaverse of just like almost an infinite world of games. And you can traverse this world and go through it and, you know, enter into different games. And there's like goals within these games where a user can, you know, accomplish a set of challenges and they receive a reward in response. And there's already games like this actually that exist on Ethereum. I actually got super into playing, oh my gosh, I can't remember the name. Bugger.
I have no idea about these Ethereum games.
I'm gonna find it and I'm gonna put it in the show notes because this game lives on Ethereum and it was made by an indie developer, just somebody who knows how to do a game or knows how to do game development. Another one actually that's coming out, I think it's in beta, is called Age of Rust. And it's sort of like a puzzle game with high definition graphics. Another one is Decentraland, where you can enter basically like this virtual world. It has plots of land that you can buy, which are essentially stored inside your wallet. And if you own that wallet, well, now you own the private keys to, you know, make changes to that plot of land.
Interesting. This, you know, it reminds me, I don't know if there's anime fans out there,
but it reminds me of the show Sword Art Online. I think, which I think is pretty in parallel with Ready Player One. But that sounds super interesting.
Yeah, so these kind of already exist on Ethereum. But what really clicked for me when watching Ready Player One is, so you have a user, you get into the metaverse, and the goal is to amass, you know, a collection, right? And you can probably think of like the entire game as mostly just the UI that interacts with the blockchain. So if you think of like websites, right, they're just a UI that interacts with a server. If you go to like the cryptodrip.com and you look at a post, it's literally just a presentation of data that lives on our server, right? The same thing can be thought of in Ready Player One. When you go into the metaverse, it's a presentation of data that lives on the blockchain. And, you know, anybody can create a universe within this you know, fictional world. I can go in and I can be like, oh, well, I'm going to start, you know, like, let's just say a Call of Duty, like, Warzone game inside this metaverse. Okay, so I'm gonna come up with the graphics. I'm going to come up with all of the user interaction. But that's going to interface through an API with the blockchain. So in Ready Player One, they perform these challenges. If somebody loses the challenge, you know, whether that be, you know, in a Call of Duty sense, it would be like you get shot and you'd have to respawn, right? But in Ready Player One, there's actually like high cost to this, where if the user goes in and they lose the game, they lose all of the assets within their wallet or their avatar, and they have to start over from zero. So there's actual risk involved. There's also actual incentive in that case to invest or put effort into finding assets within the game that ensure your survivability, right? So now you have like this entire economy built around surviving in the game.
Yeah. I feel like this is like, just like everything, like blockchain, I feel like as an industry, right? There's so many different paths within blockchain, right? As blockchain as a whole and all the paths within is developing forward. At the same time, technology in the legacy world or outside of the crypto sphere, right, is developing forward in ways that are also just as revolutionary. Like, for instance, augmented reality, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like the emergence of blockchain tech to be able to complement augmented reality is going to converge in a way that exactly like we're talking about right now, like a Ready Player One environment, right? Like where things are fully immersive, fully incentivized, and, you know, there are going to be actual risks, you know, to the game. I think that's going to be so crazy. Like, I keep saying this, the next 10 years are going to look nothing like the last 30. And I do not think people are awake to this or even understand what I mean, because I don't even know what I mean by that.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're 100% right. Like when we talk about blockchain, I mean, the ideal solution is a global database, right, that our infrastructure interfaces with. And we kind of have that to some degree with the internet. And just look at like what the internet did to society. It completely digitized information and made it cheap to transfer. What blockchain does is it digitizes ownership. And all of a sudden you have like basically the entire world replicated in a digital environment that is insanely cheap to transfer value in. But the interface in which you transfer that value is completely up to creative expression. And that's what gets me super excited about blockchain. And that's what Ready Player One is. It's a creative expression of what blockchain can be.
Interesting. I like that. So with that being said, like, there are all these like positive, you know, outcomes that we're talking about, or these things that we're excited about. I want to know, like, what are things that, you know, from a development perspective, right? Since you know, you understand like how things will be built, right, behind the scene, and how data is represented, how people will be represented, and how transactions can take place. What's your greatest fear, you know, within the current blockchain revolution?
Yeah, I mean, You know, it's kind of interesting because I think that I have two answers to this as well. They're kind of related, so I'm just going to go with it. But, you know, one is privacy. In a blockchain system, all data is retrievable. And so there has to be some sort of privacy layer that obscures that data. And there's a lot of solutions out there working to solve this problem. But at the end of the day, it's going to have to be integrated into the protocol of whatever blockchain is running, or you're going to have like gaps. Like you can't have partial privacy security, right? Like there's a lot of things inside of blockchain that, you know, and I haven't like super researched privacy blockchains yet. There's some that stand just on their own. There's others that operate kind of like side chains that kind of allow you to, you know, go off the main highway and get scrambled in a way. But what I would really like to see is some protocol level safeguards inside of a blockchain that protect a user's privacy. But you also have to be able to like interact with, especially in a blockchain that that the whole like infrastructure, our whole society runs off of, you have to be able to access private data. And I think Cardano has a lot of potential here with their KYC or their metadata capabilities with their transactions to actually opt in and allow that to be read by trusted parties. So that's one. How do you protect privacy? The other one is in a world that's completely decentralized, what are the safeguards to prevent it from becoming like almost anarchical? Like if there's no, and this branches more into like society, right? Do we want a society without a leader? Like that type of stuff. And I haven't seen a convincing explanation or philosophical argument as to what are the safeguards in a blockchain environment where nobody's the leader. What happens when you have edge case scenarios that don't fall into the protocols, you know, like who comes in and saves the day? And, some people might, you know, have an opinion. And I know a lot of people do that. Nobody should come in and save the day, that that's just life. But I, you know, I like at the end of the day, like nation states, they are, groups of people who come together for their ensured like collective survival. So how do you do that? How do you translate that safety into a blockchain? And, you know, furthermore, in a blockchain, like it's immutable data. So what do you do? Like, what are the safeguards if something damaging to society ends up on the blockchain? How do you protect people from that? And those are the questions that I don't think have really been answered yet.
Right. So do you think like the emergence of blockchain has a ceiling or like a limit in which, you know, it can operate in the efficient manner that it aims to operate in without, you know, extracting the trust or, you know, whatever varying degree of trust that people have for their nation, government, et cetera. And we operate within that ceiling or that box. Would that be like the most efficient way of which, you know, this blockchain revolution takes place? Like, do we not go to the point where we, you know, separate ourselves from centralized figures like governments? Maybe we fork ourselves, right? Like maybe, you know, there are a certain group of people who want a more, you know, multinational or I'd say borderless, you know, environment in which they want to exist in. And then there are the people who want to exist in a more like, you know, we need to have somebody in which that the masses trust in, as I said, a varying degree of trust. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I think that might.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's so far in the future that's kind of it's anybody's guess, you know, kind of what will happen. Because I think, you know, whether no matter what you think about blockchain, I think it's pretty indisputable or indisputable that it's a catalyst of change, and it's going to it's seriously challenging the norms and infrastructures that we've built society on top of, and so. Yeah. You know, I mean, even looking back at previous revolutions, it's like they weren't really smooth rides. And I think that that is kind of where like some of my fear comes in is like,
Yeah, not at all.
In this direction, you know, is it gonna get messy? And I really hope it doesn't, because blockchain, you know, as a technology, is kind of all about everyone's prosperity.
Yeah, 100%. And this kind of like piggybacks off of my point earlier I made about like blockchain, you know, revolutionizing in its own field, whereas in the traditional world, a bunch of different technologies are also revolutionizing at the same rate. And then this goes back into, you know, my love for artificial intelligence and my further continuation to dive in and research and understand how that world takes place. But like you said, like the transition periods are not going to be smooth, just like in blockchain and just like in artificial intelligence. Like for artificial intelligence, there has to be like, there are going to be so many different changes that happen. Like when we have not only an artificial intelligence that can think in broader ways, right, that can develop patterns of thought in an organized fashion and think about things the way that humans think about, right? And then right. there's that equilibrium of, you know, power in terms of conscious thought. And then you're talking about, and then when that happens, right, because AI can calculate data on orders of magnitude that we can't even comprehend. And so when we finally figure out artificial general intelligence, you know, they'll be able to take in the same amount of data that we can take in, but they can analyze it in infinitely amounts faster and mm-hmm. more efficient than we can, therefore decreasing the amount of time that we reach the singularity. And I think that's also something that really, like even the pioneers in our space, like Ben Goetzel, can't really comprehend what that's going to look like and how people are going to react to it, right? Because it's so out of the realm of what we've been used to for the past century, for the past millennia, right? Like mm-hmm. blockchain and AI both have equal opportunities to disrupt things that never thought was going to be disrupted, right? And for AI specifically, like even the way that you think is going to be disrupted, like your understanding of your conscious thought is going to be thought of differently when we do reach, you know, artificial general intelligence. Like, so like those are things to think about, like as we transition into new periods of history. Right. And I think it's just super, super exciting to be in this space, you know, along with other like-minded people who realize the potential for these technologies and the things that will change because of these technologies. And we get to be at the forefront of that. Right.
Yeah, so it's amazing.
I'm very excited for the future and what it holds for everybody in this space.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, and I've said this before too, that blockchain isn't really gonna explode until the average user's interaction with it has nothing to do with cryptocurrency.
And exactly. I think,
you know, like I would bet that we saw history with Cardano and Ethereum, because now we have an actual situation where students interact with the blockchain just to do their schoolwork. And that's that's huge. That's people, you're going to get into crypto without even knowing it at that point.
And exactly. It's like, it's that seamless end user experience where they don't know that they're interacting with something. That's going to be the change or the catalyst for mass adoption. 100% agree.
Yep. So it's super exciting times. I think that's about it though. You got anything else to add?
Yeah, I put a lot out there, you know, like a lot of things that I've been dwelling on, that I've been thinking about, and I'm super glad I got to like let the people like let our followers know like what's been going on inside of my head.
Yeah, for sure.
So I love this conversation.
Yeah, I know. We could almost do a part two of this conversation.
Seriously, yeah.
The one thing I'm super interested in is, you know, we're talking about Singularity Net, like AI disruption, blockchain disruption. But there's this like almost hidden volcano underneath all of it called quantum computing.
No, let's how save much that that's for just another episode. Yeah, dude.
It could that's, be like its own thing, just by
exactly, itself. Exactly.
That wraps up episode number 3 of the Crypto Drip. We want to thank you for listening in. You can find myself on Twitter at Kryptos Calvin, and you can find Mr. Goose at Goose of Crypto. As always, you can find our official accounts at The Crypto Trip. Make sure to sign up and become a member for free at thecryptodrip.com/join. You can also pay $10 a month to get premium content delivered by both Mr. Goose and myself, delivered 5 days a week on current events, macro trends, micro trends, and the broader crypto industry. Until next time, thanks for listening in.